Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Before we jump into this next episode, I want to tell you a little bit about what we got going on. If you've ever wanted to go hunting with me or the Days in the Wild crew, we are doing a raffle for a 5-day fully outfitted archery hunt. We're actually giving two of those away. It's a $40 entry. But there's only 100 entries sold. So you got a 1 in 100 chance of winning. So it's a really, really good chance to go hunting here in Arizona during the rut on archery hunt. You could actually opt to, if you have a rifle tag, it's past the draw date now, but if you have a rifle tag, you can actually opt for us to take you on the rifle hunt as well. Like I said, 1 in 100 chance. You go to my blog at johnstallone.me, and there will be a raffle section. Just go to the raffle section and purchase your ticket there. We will also be giving away a handful, I think 4 or 5, I don't remember now, but one-day coyote hunts or predator hunts. Those are it's a $400 value. We charge $400 to guide for guided-only predator hunts 1 day. And those are $30, and it's a 1 in 10 chance of winning, which is pretty darn awesome, I think. So 1 in 10 chance of winning, and you can opt to purchase some more days if you want to come out, let's say, for 3-day hunt and get one for free, basically, and purchase some other days. We'll give you a discount. So go to johnstallone.me and check out the raffle. Let's roll into this episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to talk about elk. We got Paul Medell on with us, and we are going to listen to some of his stories and some of his teaching moments on how and when he learned how to do different calls, when he figured out what was most effective, effective practices and stuff like that. Excuse me, I got a little tongue twisted. How's it going today, Paul?
Hey, it's going good, John. Hey, thanks a lot for having me back. I always enjoy discussing things like elk and whatnot with the different guys, and you always ask some good questions. So I appreciate the invite back.
I appreciate you coming back on. Your podcasts are always a favorite, so we love having you on, and I think you're a really interesting, animated guy, and it's easy to listen to you. So for me as a host, it's a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, absolutely. So you kind of heard my my bumbling intro. if we could start off with maybe a story on how you figured out elk in the way that they use terrain and where they're going to bed, what was it that put this together for you? Like, and then we'll get into some of your stories about calling and learning how to do sequences and stuff.
Yeah. You know, you made a real interesting point right in the very beginning, and it caught my attention real quick, and you probably don't even know it, but you did. And that is when you started talking about different sounds and whatnot, it's a process. It was nothing that was, happened overnight. And so, whether we're into any encounters or we're trying to unfold the mystery of a sound or the emotion that an elk was making, it's not like you only do this once or twice. Like I say, it's a process. So that was a very interesting point that you brought up. And right. So when they're listening to these stories, they have to understand that a lot of times there's a lot of trial and error before, positive results happen. And so it's kind of a learning process for us all, not just myself. I mean, we all go through it. Mm-hmm. And once we start putting the pieces of the puzzle together like that, from repetitious, whether it was mistakes or they were pluses, It helps us to, you know, to go forward, and we know how to handle the next encounter with a little more smarts behind us. It doesn't mean they all work out, but the majority of them will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what was that last question you asked me, though, to, that you wanted me to cover real quick?
So I wanted to kind of start off with, because I a lot of guys give, you know, there's a lot of guys out there talking about calling and how to call, and that's what I call the sexy part of elk hunting. But there's not a lot of people talking about, you know, learning the other behaviors that don't involve calling, learning how they use the terrain, you know, their habits of going to water and going to the bed and so on and so forth. And I know that, again, there's not one specific story, but if you had a couple like scenarios where you're like, okay, well, I learned that elk, you know, go to water typically between this time and this time because of this. This is when I made the realization of it, or.
And of course, you know, so much depends on the weather, the temperatures, how cold, how hot, you know, that's going to determine a lot. So it's kind of hard to say the elk are always going to go between 11:30 and 1:30, you know, because we never know if it's going to be raining, it's cold, it's snow, it's hot. It's we run into a lot of different temperature changes and climates when we're elk hunting, even in September, which is my favorite time. But there's no question, the number one thing when I'm hunting elk, I want them in their bedding area. And areas can differ. I hunt areas, John, and I don't mean just, you know, areas that I've hunted repetitively, but I mean everywhere, seven different states. And I find that when I can hit the darkest timber, I notice that when this dark timber areas, and it doesn't matter if it's north, southwest, east, northeast, whatever, when I find dark stuff and it has the things that elk like, the water, the seclusion, the feed, I find that a lot of those elk don't leave that area. They stay right there. They're there all day. So that means if I catch them at daylight and I get a bugle, they're always within hearing range of me. They're not the elk that are leaving and going anywhere from a half a mile to 3 miles away or whatever. They just don't do that. They stay right there. And I have a lot of areas like that. And so I don't think a lot of people realize it, that elk will do that when they have everything they need right there, unless there's pressure pushing them out. But I will tell you that most of the bedding areas that we hunt, we're calling almost 90 to 95% of the bulls down to us. Now, I know a lot of people think that's kind of an unusual thing, but there's no question in my mind that if you're talking about calling elk above you or at the same elevation left or right, or are you bringing them down to where you're at, that's our number one way, is we're calling them down to us. And I believe there's a reason for it. You know, and elk don't talk, so you know, you kind of just go over things where you have had hundreds of encounters. And I believe those bulls, when they're coming down to the calling, it's because they feel they have the leverage or they have the advantage of the uphill coming down, no matter how big or small I am. You know, I'm representing a bull. I'm representing a cow, an elk to them. And they're not trying to fight a cow, so it's generally a bull when I'm bringing them down in an aggressive nature. The point is that they like that above you. There's something about it, and that's where we're calling most every bull. We took nine more bulls this year with archery equipment, and I believe eight of them came downhill on this year. And it's the same every year. There's kind of a pattern there of bringing them back down. And the reason I say we hunt the bedding area is when you really evaluate the entire thing, whether elk leave an area from feeding to bedding or not. Let's say that all elk left their feeding area and went to a bedding, and then they leave their bedding and come to a feeding. Okay, where are those elk 85% of the day? Bedding area. If they're in their feeding, they leave like the first hour of daylight or half hour to an hour, depending on the pressure, and then they're in transition. They leave the feeding, they're in transition, and they're in bedding in no time. 9:30, they're there. Sometimes 10 if there's just no pressure at all, but that's rare on over-the-counter units, and that's what I'm really referring to, because when you can hunt over the counter, you can pretty much hunt anywhere. And so that's the, you know, in that first hour and a half to two, they're already in their bedding area, and then they leave the last hour or so to from bedding to come back to their nighttime feeding, bedding, watering areas. So 85% of the time, where are the elk during the day? Bedding area.
Right.
Most people hunt the bedding areas and they don't even know it. They have no idea they are. Because you ask them if they, oh no, I'd never hunt the bedding area. That's sacred and I'll push them out and blah, 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 blah. But that's where most of us are hunting and they don't know they are, but they are. Because anytime after 9, 9:30, you're right in it or very close to it, that proximity. But I like them there. And some of those bedding areas, like I say, they're already there at daylight. I mean, right at daylight, before it's even light out hardly. They're already in the vicinity where they get within earshot of me or me of them. And so, especially the dark-timbered elk, they don't go very far. They stay right in those vicinities. I've put trail cameras up and for years in these same areas. And we've killed like six or seven different bulls off this one little mountainside. When I say little, it's probably a mile and a half long, but that's small for Idaho.
Right.
And I've had trail cameras up there every single year, nonstop. I have one bull on a trail camera and countless cows. Not one of those bulls, those other bulls that we took, were on that camera. We didn't even know they were there. But after realizing they don't all walk by the camera, even though, get a load of this, six out of the seven bulls that we killed were within 300 yards of that camera.
Wow.
You just never know. So you can't trust your camera saying this is what's in the area and this what isn't. And I'm basically talking six-point bulls here. So the thing is, you never know where they're going to be, whether in that bedding or how far they're from a camera. So, you know, just don't get fooled that the camera's showing you all the clientele in an area. But, yeah, the bedding area is right there and calling them downhill. It seems if I can get 150, 200 yards, that seems to be a pattern from year after year after year after year. Get within that vicinity, and you can strike gold with them.
And then, you know, you made me think of something else, though. Like, during the rut, these elk are moving around so much. I've seen elk that, you know, actually a buddy of mine, we were talking about it the other day. We were watching this bull, you know, all summer long, and he was in one spot, and then he was 10 miles, you know, up the road, come the rut.
Right.
So if you're running a camera in an area, you might be getting bulls that are passing through that are, you know, just happen to be there that you're, you know, calling in for those couple of days because they're on a, you know, on a 3-day loop of some sort or, you know.
Yeah, right.
So.
And that happens, you know, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation actually has, you know, data and stats on all this. So they have elk that have gone as far as 25 miles. Bulls have gone as far as 25 miles away to go where the cows were. And then they leave, and they've had them for, you know, years in a row that these same bulls would travel that distance to come where the cows were coming the rut. Yeah, do all elk do that? No. But it happens, kind of like what you're saying, a 10-mile, you know, distance. And that's what they're doing, is they're actually going to where the cows are.
Right.
The cows aren't traveling that 10, 25 miles to the bulls. It's the bulls coming over to them.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, and you can see it. I mean, I don't care what state you go to. If the elk are up high, generally it's the satellites or bachelor groups or whatever they are, all the bulls. But they'll end up slowly coming down the mountain, just like a big old buck. Once the does start coming into heat, these bucks just start slowly sliding down that mountain. They don't run all down at one day. No, they just start making their way as they feel. Their testosterone levels start to rise is what it is. They know the rut's coming on, and they'll start making their way down this mountain. Not, like I say, not down in one day. They just start doing it until they're right there in the vicinity, and animals are coming in to estrus. So then it's just their noses take over, and they're everywhere. But yes, elk can definitely be in one place and nowhere near your cameras. In these areas, I knew they were already there. I could see their tracks. I could see their sign. I knew they were there. I wasn't getting them on the camera, though. But I'm talking about cameras that are set right near. I don't mess around with cameras before or 2 weeks or so before the season opens. Before that, I don't even mess with them. So I knew they were somewhere around there, and especially after we started taking bulls. But just imagine how many areas are like that. Mm-hmm. They're no different than that. I mean, any state, any unit. And so, you know, it's something that hunters need to think about. And that's why I'm such a big caller. You know, when I'm going through the woods, I get out of my truck, John, and I'm in an area I've never been to in my life. I get out of the truck, first thing I do is bugle. I'm bugling right there. I want to know if there's anything there. I want to know if something will respond to me. Most of the time they don't, but there is those occasions they do, so I know something's nearby. And if they're not, I move. I keep going up the mountain or wherever I'm at. I'm covering ground and I'm bugling. And how, where do I bugle? Where I couldn't have heard from the last spot I bugled from. That's what I'm doing. I'm bugling here. I'm not just walking every 100 yards and bugling. I'm
Right.
bugling where I couldn't have heard anything, where I bugled last. Or if I get over to a drainage and I'm looking down fingers or basins, I'm calling into them. And I'm rarely ever cow calling. Hardly ever am I just meow, 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 and then bugle down over. I don't even care about that. Half the time they wouldn't hear it. They're so far away. But so I'm bugling and repetitiously as I go from area to area to area until I finally find a vocal bull. And so that's what I'm basically doing when I'm leaving, in case people were wondering, how are you finding the elk? I'm not sneaking around like I'm deer hunting. I'm being vocal. I'm trying to get something to respond, or I would hear something on their own. You see, and that's where I read them. So many times you hear guys say, I got this bull to respond, and then I did some bunch of calling and calling and calling, moved in, did some calling and nothing. And next thing you know, well, I'm trying to find one that's going to play. I'm going to try to find one that's play. Six in a row, do this or whatever. But most of the time, more than that.
Right.
They're just leaving so much on the table there if they would just adjust their calling to fit that bull. But you know, try not to get sidetracked there. We learn a lot from all those little things, you know, the encounters we're in, even the ones we mess up. And I think that's where a lot of it comes, whether we're hearing a bull bark at us or grunt at us, or is he giving a roundup bugle real quick because he heard his bugle, which means he's trying to gather his cows and get out of there. So see, understanding these different sounds that you'll hear out there, and not just say, oh, he just bugled, but understanding them, this is where a lot of these stories that I have that are positive results have come from, is understanding after enough trial and error that we started turning them into our favor and using some of these same sounds they're using against them.
So you made me think of formulating the way I was going to ask you to tell a story. Do you have a story? I'm sure you do, because you got a bunch, but that basically takes us through all,
No, I don't know. What is it? You got me on the edge.
I know, so how, I don't figure out how to say this, without like being obvious. Getting out of the truck, bugling, going to this point, bugling, going to that point, bugling, getting a response, and the type of response you got, and how you took it from there, and end up ultimately killing that bull. I mean,
Gosh, they're all like
but
that.
I mean, something that takes like, there might be, there's probably stories where you made a bugle from the truck and you got a response and you went after him, or
Okay, I got you.
I'm talking one that kind of like try to takes you through all the steps, so to speak, you
All
know?
right, let's do one from this year.
Okay, yeah.
We'll do one from this year. And I'm sure nobody's even heard this one because it just happened. But we were going to go hunting. I believe it was like September the 21st, if I remember right. And my son hadn't taken a bull yet, and it was a rainy day, and he didn't want to go hunting because it was raining. And he goes, nah, I don't want to go hunting. I said, oh, we got to go hunt, man. I mean, this is a good day. We kill a lot of elk on rainy days. Finally talked him into going hunting. So we get over there. We get to the spot we're going to go to, and it's still dark. We're pulled over on the side of the road. There's no trails. Where we like to hunt, start our hunts, there's usually no trails, no nothing. There's no dirt road running off a gated dirt road or anything. So we usually try to start where nobody else would even think of hunting. And sometimes the elk aren't even there either, but you just never know. And so we go to this spot, we pull over, and we're there. I'm not going to go through every little thing that we did there, but just before daylight, I'm out of the truck, and I heard a cow call right there. And my son, he's still sitting in the truck. I'm sitting over there, and I hear another cow call and another cow call. And I'm like, well, my goodness, there's cows right here. And there's probably a campground not even a half a mile from where we're parked, and there's two or three camps sitting there. And there's elk right here. You know, I mean, this happens all the time to people in different areas that they're hunting. Anyway, I go tell my son, I says, there's elk right here. And he rolls down his window, and I said, just listen. And all of a sudden, he could hear the cows. And I was like, well, so he started getting his spirits up. I mean, it's raining. He doesn't want to go. We'll kill an elk another day anyway, Dad. And I go, no, we're going. So we get our rain gear on because it's coming down. And these elk start going up the mountain, the one that we were actually thinking of going up. And as we get up there, I hear a bull bugle way up there. I said, come on, let's go. We'll get this bull right here. I said, you're going to kill this bull. And he's, you know, so we go up. This is your kids. You know, this is how they are. And so we head up the mountain. I hear the bull bugle again, and my ears are kind of not the best like they used to be, you know, at 64. They're not the same, but I still hear good. And so we get up. I said, well, this bull's not very far away. I said, let's set up right here. So we set up. He's only maybe 25, 30 yards from me because the bull bugle, I would say, 6 or 7 times. So I don't have a bull. I'm reading the bull, right? He's not a lazy, lethargic bed bugle with nothing happening. And I could hear this bull, and I could hear another one above him, well above him. And they were actually answering each other, and I could hear the cows ahead of me. They were on this side of that bull. And you could tell which one was a herd bull. He was the one that was just on the other side of the cows, which I thought was a couple hundred yards, but apparently it was further. So I sat up and called, and he answered instantly. So I sat up and did just kind of a little sequence of a few cow calls, excited bull call, trying to get him to give away his mindset better. And he was, but he was still too far. So I told my son, I run up to him. I said, man, that thing's nowhere near as close as I thought. This is an actual encounter, John. This is how it unfolded. So I go to him. We're maybe 10 minutes into it. We head up to about two different benches. It takes us maybe 6, 7 minutes. I'm not saying anything as I'm moving up, but the bull still bugled a couple more times. I can still hear a cow call every once in a while as they're making their way up the hill. They're still not to the bull, though. So we hustle up there to get, okay, this is definitely close enough. And so I give a couple cow calls and I bugle right over the top of it. And he answers instantly and he sounds like he's as far away he was the first time. I'm like, no way. I mean, I'm really that far off. So I told myself, we got to get it further. We got to get it further. So we hustle up to another couple of benches. I could hear the bull bugle a couple times. I said, okay, we're now within 200 yards of this bull. That is one of my favorite distances. I know it sounds far to a lot of people, but it's really not when you have an aggressive bull, especially. And so as soon as I got up there, I immediately tried to call the cows. Immediately, I went to the Roundup bugle. The Roundup bugle is directed to the cows and not the bull. He knows it. There's no question in his mind. And so as I gave that roundup, he immediately fired off. And I'm like, okay, this bull is way closer. And I'm only 15 yards from my son, and he's on the top of a bench. I put him on the bench. When I say I put him, Paul knows what to do. He's 41. But, you know, he's not a little kid here. And I just said, man, get right there. But you know how dads are. I mean, it's like, you still want to say, get right here. I'm going to go here. And it's just, things happen quick. And you know, and he just does it, but he knows what he's doing. So he got up there, and I got under him, so I could see his whole back, but I couldn't see anything where he was on that level, which is exactly what I wanted to pull the bull to me. And so I'm starting raking and thrashing. And I try to call the cows again with that roundup, and I can even show you what the roundup is. I won't get loud with it, but I'll show you what the roundup is. This is the sound that a bull will use when he is trying to pull cows that he knows are there his way. And as you know, people have heard location bugles, they've heard challenges, they've heard everything. But really pay close attention how he starts out with a short growl, he hits a pitch, and then he goes to that little bit of a growly, like a lip ball. Sometimes some guys can't do it, so you have to kind of give the end of the bugle would be more of a, you have that at the end, but it's easier for me to do it in a lip ball fashion. But this is the short sound he'll do. It's only like a second and a half long, but a bull will do this when he's trying to bring the cows over his direction. Which, if there's a herd bull there, he doesn't like that, not at all, even though he knows that I'm not talking to him. So here's the sound. And that's what he does. He gives that short little roundup. And as soon as I did, that bull went nuts. And I immediately cut him off with about, I'd say maybe a 5 or 6 challenge. I don't like giving him everything I got. I want to be able to build his, you know, the enthusiasm and his emotion behind it. And as soon as he did, I knew he was going to do it. And I just immediately went through my bugle and just kind of hit him. You know, I hit him and boom, he hit me right over the top. And I tried to call the cows again immediately with the Roundup. And when I did, I could just hear running, crashing, running, and screaming. And this bull comes flying down the mountain because that bull was going to need some medicine from the real bull. That bull meaning me. He come flying down, and I'm raking and thrashing and raking. And I screamed another bugle, and the next thing I know, I see my son draw back. I can see him from his back. And this bull came running in so fast that he wasn't going to stop. Paul said, I saw him coming at 50, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, until he was 15, 10, 5 yards, and all his pins are right on his front, right on front shot. And he's like, I had to shoot him right there. He wasn't going to stop. And he shot him at 5 yards. And at 5 yards, it went completely dead-centered him in the chest, just under his neck. And fortunately, you know, Paul has a lot of experience, so people can understand. That was his 29th bull with a bow. So it's not like he's never seen this before. He's killed quite a few on a frontal. So he has that demeanor. He knows exactly where he had to put it, but it was still super high intensity. Because when he turned around, when I saw him shoot, he turned around and looked, and I'm raking, I'm screaming a bugle, because I didn't know what happened. I didn't see the shot. I could just hear the bugle and the bull, and Paul, I'm like, that bull has to be right on top of him. I'm looking at him go, was that bull like 15, 20 yards? And he went, 5. And he just stared at me with eyeballs big as silver dollars. And I kid you not, he was just staring at me. And he was just like, he couldn't even breathe. And so I went running up the hill because I wanted to know what happened. I didn't know he took a funnel. I didn't know any of that. As I run up there, I go, what happened? Where's the bull? And he points, and I'm talking like 10 yards. That bull's laying there dead. Right there in front of us. He's just laying there, completely piled up, and it's a big bull. I've showed pictures of it online and Instagram and stuff. I mean, this is a big, big, over-the-counter bull, half a mile off a dirt road, rainy day, you just never know where they're going to be. 3 setups, and I called him in by trying to call his cows from him, and then cut him off when he got aggressive with me. Try to call a cow again real quick. Did I need to do that? Maybe, maybe not. It's not the point. Is I've watched elk do this, and that's how you play the game. And so when I hit him with that first challenge, I don't like getting too big, because if you get too big, you got nowhere to go. It's too much sometimes. And so I knew I still had room to elevate my bugle or my challenge, and which is exactly what I did. And I've just been there so many times. You get that, and here they come. They just can't take it. And I literally called that bull from almost 200 yards away, and he was there in seconds right on top of us. So don't think you always have to be in that 75, 80-yard range. You know, when you play the game right and you know the cows are there and you can call them and then cut them off, call the cows back, cut them. I mean, usually that's all it takes. And don't you think that bull had been called to that year?
Oh, yeah.
You better believe it. I probably, who knows how many times, because he's just right there. I mean, guys have probably heard him and tried calling him and all this stuff. I mean, it's just one of those areas. But there's a perfect example of how I actually learned that sound many, many years ago. If you look on, you know, when I wrote the playbook almost 10 years ago and some of the others, I talk about calling the bulls, cows, away from him. And that is the sound he'll use. If you've ever got into a bull and you're bugling, and you hear him give that short sound right there, that little high pitch and a quick lick ball, all real fast. He's trying to gather his cows together. He's not talking to you. And so that means when I hear that sound, I have to get on that bull super fast because I know what he's going to do. He's trying to get him and get out of there. And so I try to get on him really, really quick and call those away from him. You know, so there's situations like that. In this case, I got close enough and called the cows away, did my best to call them away before he ever got to that point. So, you know, you're playing that game. So this is how you learn from mistakes a lot of times. You start reading the emotional sound that a bull will use that will send a specific message.
Yeah. I was hunting elk in Oregon last year on the coast for Rosie's. And I was hunting with Shannon Mobbs and Corey Ford, both very successful Roosevelt elk hunting. Hunting guys, and anyway we had this one bull in he would let us get to like 60 yards. I mean, it's so thick over there. 60 yards might as well be 20 yards, or might as well be 100 yards.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he would let us get to 60 yards. I would have the cows between him and us, and, you know, whatever it was, even with the Roundup bugle, I think we were a little too heavy with the challenges, but even with the Roundup bugle, every time we get to about that distance, he would round his cows up and take them 150 yards, and then we'd have to catch back up with them. He'd never, like, you know, get the heck out of there completely. He kept switching sides. We were in this, like, canyon, and he kept going down and up on the other side and then stopping, and then we'd go call and get underneath them and try to call them down to us. And you know, I did 7 miles just going around in circles after this bull, and I could not, for whatever reason, could not get him to commit. We end up nicknaming him Pussy because he wouldn't.
No, you know what happens?
Would never stand and fight.
Well, here's what happens. When you work a bull the very first time, if you don't kill him on a good bull, your odds fall right off the table. Your best odds to kill a decent bull, especially one with a lot of cows, is your very first encounter. If you hit him even hours later or the next day, a bull's memory span will last about 3 days. And so after 3 days, it's like nothing ever happened. But if you weren't the only one hunting that area, who knows what happened that evening, the next day, that evening, the next day, if other hunters will hit that same bull. When you hit a bull like that, like I say, a decent bull, if you do not kill him with calls, you now have to have turned the tables. You now can only kill that bull by him calling you to him. That's your only other method. You have nothing. You could be the best caller in the world and call his cows and do it every time, but you've already educated him that very first time. And your odds of killing him the first time are over 90%. The second time, less than 20%. You try to work him a third time, you might as well just go find another bull. You're not going to kill him with calling. So the way you do it is you make him call you to him. This exact situation took place with a friend of mine where he was going through this very similar scenario on an over-the-counter tag. And he got a glimpse of the bull, and he said, "Paul, it's a big bull." And I said, "Really?" I said, "All right, here's how you're going to have your best opportunity. There's never any guarantees, but here's your best opportunity." I said, "When you get into him next time, find him with your bugle, because it's the best way to find him." He did. And I said, "Here's what you do. Once you find him, get closer, try to get 150 yards, and cow call excitedly. Make him call you to him. The minute he makes a sound, he's calling you to him. That's the only way, only chance you got. You got to run at him once he does that. You have no other chance." Mm-hmm. He ended up doing that exact thing. He bugled the bull. He got him going. And as soon as he moved in closer and started cow calling and the bull started bugling him, which I told him, he's trying to call you to him and he won't leave. If you run at him and continue to cow call excitedly, you don't just meow. You don't do that. When a cow is accepting that, you know, and she's running to the invite, you'll hear her kind of go. She'll go like that, like a dog whining, and she'll run right at the bull. He ran to 15 yards, 362-inch bull. Wow. He shot him at 10 yards away is what he ended up shooting. He said, "Bull, you're stupid." He says, "I kept the cover in the wind, like you said, and I thought, I have nothing to lose. Nothing. I cow call. I ran right at him." This is an over-the-counter bull. And that is actually the biggest bull for the Elknut team that was part of the Elknut team. That the bull we've killed was 362 inches. And we've got a couple 340s, one 348, some 330s. But that bull, there was no way you were going to mess with him and call him in with all the greatest, fanciest sounds. I don't care how good your elk language was. He had already been burned. So that is exactly what I had him do, and when I saw that bull, I had not seen one that big on the over-counter in that area, and I'd hunted that area before, and I had never seen that bull before ever. But he killed him, and it was a toad. But that's how he got it. He ran right at him cow calling, and I've told you stories before. I've killed several bulls with a longbow doing that, but they weren't 360, but they were close to 300, so they were really nice, bulls no matter what.
Right.
But that was a tank of a bull right there. And don't you think that thing hadn't hurt everything? That was no dummy. And that bull right there was killed less than a mile from a dirt road. So, you know, he'd just been around there, you know, how many years, my goodness, to grow to that stage. But just giving you an idea, there are things that you can do. I've actually gotten in bulls. Well, I won't go there. We'll save it. But we're just showing you that this is how we take so many elk, John. You know, people ask me this all the time. How are you? I mean, we've killed over 200 in 29 years over the counter. How are you guys? How do you do it every year? What are you doing? I mean, because people think you just walk around bugling and cattle calling. But that's not it. A lot of times we have to let the animal call us to them because we burnt our bridge already before that. And so, meaning we didn't kill him on the first attempt. And things like that just happen. But you can't be so readily to throw the towel in. And so you have to think outside the box so many times. And sometimes it's a matter of you get that bull at 60 yards. And you hit the cow calls, and then you start crashing the antlers, and you start glunking and panting, and we start crashing antlers together, and that's why I carry them, is you start making them think that there's two bulls competing for this cow. And the minute you start hitting all the little whines and moans, and when I'm talking, when I got bulls doing that, a lot of times, John, I'm making sounds like this. And I'll just mix it up and throw it everywhere. Like these two bulls are exasperated and they're clashing. And when you throw a few of those little cow sounds in, it shows there's usually a hot cow there and they're competing, combating for her. And you cannot believe how many bulls, when you're hitting those horns together, want to come in and see them duking it out right there. Yeah. And it makes a real scenario when you start hitting the antlers and you have a cow right there, because they generally won't do that unless there's a cow coming into heat. That's what they're competing for. They're not just playing around. They're trying to take the winner who's going to take that cow. And you can't believe how many times we've had bulls commit. They come right in when they wouldn't do anything with any other sound. But they hear that real realization of antlers clacking together, and, man, it just pushed them right over the edge. Because it's a real thing. But it's little things like that sometimes that can punch that tag, whereas all the other sounds in the world just mean nothing to them.
No, I've always been a preacher of creating the whole illusion.
Yes, creativity is exactly right. Yeah.
I used to talk about that with whitetail hunting.
Mm.
Just for instance, something that we used to do. I used to tie a rope to a bunch of to a branch. And I would leave that branch laying in the leaves so that when I was rattling with my horns, I would lift up on that rope with my foot.
That's a good idea.
And it would sound like, you know, deer prancing around, you know, fighting each other and making the leave noise. Because often when you hear rattling, or often when you hear bucks fighting or bulls fighting, you hear their footsteps and you hear that stomping and whatnot. And I started applying that. You know, to elk too.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I'm raking on a tree with an elk horn, an elk antler, I'm stomping the branches below, you know, with my feet, because when the bulls are moving around and working a tree, they're breaking stuff. They're not being quiet. That's not the only sound that's coming out of their head is the antlers. It's the feet stomping. It's the, like you said, panting. I've never done the panting thing because I don't.
You're making it real.
Yeah.
Is what you're doing. Yeah, I love the panting. And there's a reason I do the panting, because, you know, over the years of all the research I've done, I've realized what each sound represents to them, as far as the message being tossed out. And the reason a bull pants is they do it for several reasons. They can do it when they're frustrated. They can do it through excitement. You know, it's like a lot of times you'll hear a bull, he may pant before he screams a bugle. You hear him, and then he just he'll nail it. You know, if he's not doing what you want him to do. You see, a lot of times they get frustrated because you won't leave, and maybe they're warning you to get back. And this bull's getting excited over the situation because he knows there's a hot cow there because he can smell it in the air. You see, and so they'll lead off with those pants and groans, and they just scream the bugle over it. So a pant, understanding the message being sent or the definition of it is what we all need to know as hunters, because you know when to use it and when not to use it. And, oh, you can't believe how many bulls we've called in with the pant being the key supplement to anything else we did. The pant is what was the home run sound. And we save it, though. We're not just throwing it out there, you know, randomly for no reason. And no more than when we glunk. When we glunk, we're doing it at a specific time and a specific distance. You see, and those things are important when you're kind of... You see, and when you're making those sounds like a bull will do, and you know when a bull only does that when there's a hot cow around.
Right.
You're not gonna. Yeah, he's trying to taste the air. He's trying to glunk and taste it. You know, it's so thick, and you'll hear him sometimes even breathing. I'll do it through my tube when I'm getting him closer and closer. You'll hear me kind of go, and I'll breathe through my tube with my nose, and then give a couple of softer pants. And I mean, you may think it sounds kind of corny, but let me tell you something. When you're there and you hear them doing it as they're coming in, you can hear them breathing through their nostril really deep. And yeah. I'll actually do that through my tube and then just give them that. And just breathe real heavy and then maybe just give a short little bugle. It just sells your whole package. This isn't what they hear from other hunters. These are the things we're doing to kill all these bulls every single year on over-the-counter. So, no, we're not just running out there throwing these big monster bugles around and a couple of cow calls and they come trotting up to us. I wish. You know, guys aren't doing that. And that's why you see over-the-counter hunts to kill bulls is under 10%. Almost any unit, any state you go to. But yet, you can actually up your odds tremendously if you just understand when to use those sounds. And you'll know when to use them when you know the meaning of them.
Right. I wanted to ask you this. So do you ever, when you're creating the whole illusion, do you ever add scent?
No, because I don't want them smelling me.
Right.
No.
Never. Okay.
And never use a decoy either. I've never called anyone. Did nothing wrong with them, but my setups are extremely tight. Even if I'm hunting open country, I do everything I can not to say a sound other than watch them until I catch them in the cover. Once they hit the cover, that's where I got them. But I don't call to elk in the open. Nothing, not a peep. Because so many times they'll try to invite you over or call you out. And people don't understand that. They're in the open and they make an elk sound even though they're, you know, a quarter mile away or hundreds of yards and they're hidden. And then they hear an elk make a sound and they're, oh yeah, we got an answer. What they don't get is, they don't understand the sound they're hearing. They're trying to get them to come out. Come over and join them. And when you don't do it, and they've asked you to, whether it's a cow or a bull, the bull may just chuckle. A cow will use a sound like this if she tells you to come over. Here's what you'll hear. She drops her note. That's what she's doing. She's not going. No. And she'll drop it, and that's telling you to come on over. This is the same sound she uses as they're moving to feeding, to bedding, bedding to feeding, and they're in the timber, and something doesn't start answering as they're communicating, walking through, making sure everybody's okay. If she's not receiving a satisfactory response from a lead cow or a mom, she'll throw that little louder, and drop her note, letting them know, where are you? Get back over here. Come on over here. That's what they're doing. So when you hear these cows make these different sounds or a bull make a sound and they're in the opening, people are just, oh, they're calling to us right there. Oh, this is great. Did I hear them answering? No, that's bad. They're hearing you. They're telling you to come on out. They want you to come to them. And when you don't, they know something's wrong. Because in the real elk world, these real elk would show themselves visually or start making their way to them. They don't run there, but they'll make their way to them. But when you don't, they know something's wrong, and so I don't say anything to them. So if they invite me like that when I'm in the cover, what can I do? I go right to them. Yeah. I'm walking right at them, making the sounds I know they expect to hear right there. You see, I can still keep it soft, but I can keep it real whiny and just real repetitious real quick because they know that's the sound that they should be hearing from a real elk. How do I know this? I called so many cows in with bugles and cow calls, and as they come, I listen to them very, very closely. Very close. As a matter of fact, I got a story I want to tell you as soon as the time is appropriate here before we go off that is just, this thing is so I mean, the impact that it made on us, which I knew the sounds I was hearing, but it was absolutely phenomenal. It was something that everybody has to remember and learn from it.
Well, let's go ahead and do that one.
Yeah.
Let's do that story right now, and then what I'd like to do, since we've had a lot of technical difficulty in getting this started, is get you back on for part two, and then I got very specific questions for you.
All right.
So yeah, let's tell this story. We'll bring this particular podcast episode to a close, and then I will have you on for the part two, and we'll go from there.
All right, that sounds great. Now this story is the ending, so to speak, to the bull my son took this year, that one I had related the story, and he shot it at 5 yards away. Now, get a load of this. As we're coming up the hill and we hit to the second setup, I decide, I mean, it's raining, it's slick, and we're talking super steep. And so I decide, you know what? I'm just going to take my pack off right here and I'm going to set it. But I knew the area well. So you have to understand that. I'm not just dropping my pack just anywhere. I've been in this area many times. I knew exactly where everything was in it. It's one of those I've hunted for 15 years. So it was easy for me to do. And I thought, I'm going to lay it right here and I can move quicker because it's steep. And my son at 41 was moving a lot faster than me, even though I'm in actually pretty good shape. But you just can't buy back youth. I found that out no matter what. Anyway, we start trucking up and I'm trying to keep up because these elk are higher than we thought they were, and I don't want them to get on the move. I know I got to stay with them and put the pressure on them. So I decide about my pack. This is part of the story. So now we kill the bull. You've already heard that. So now we're standing over the bull. And I told my son, I says, well, I said, just wait right here for a second. I mean, the thing's laying there dead. And I said, I'm going to just run back and get my pack. It's only like 5 or 6 minutes below. It's steep. I can just run right down and grab it. And of course, he's like, you took your pack off? And I said, yeah, I know. So he still has his on. So I run down and grab my pack. Now, here's where it really gets good. As I come back up to him, I'm probably 50 yards away, and he's telling me with his two palms up, kind of slow down, be quiet. And I'm like, what? And as I, so, you know, I'm like, and it's raining, so it's quiet anyway. And so as I start coming up there, I can hear cows talking. They're like crazy up above them. And
Crazy.
so I get back up to my son and I said, what's going on? He goes, ever since you left, those cows are trying to call the bull up to them. They, I mean, they say they're dead, but they know that's their bull. And I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. He said, they have been nonstop. He said, and listen to this one cow. She keeps giving the contact buzz, which means she's being urgent. This is what the contact buzz means. You see, a lot, or I've rephrased it from estrus buzz to contact, where a lot of guys had thought the estrus buzz was a cow in heat sound. And I keep trying to explain to people, it's not. I've heard this sound and have footage of it all through the year. Where a cow's given, and that's what she'll do. And he says, this one cow, about every minute, hits this about 3 or 4 times and doesn't say anything else. And all the rest are just, and I can hear them. There's six of them or so up there. And so he goes, just listen to it. Watch this one. And all of a sudden, there's that cow, real loud, and she's just hammering it and stops. And then all of a sudden, they're all just chiming in away again. I mean, this went on for like 10 minutes. And we're sitting there like, are you kidding me? And we knew what they were doing. They were trying to call the bull up. And they're only 60 yards, but we can't see him. It's just too thick. Like the country you referred to earlier. And we're listening. After about that 10-minute period, I heard a bull give a roundup bugle above him. And he's probably 300 yards. A bull came around, and all of a sudden, and he called. And all of a sudden, the cow calls just kind of went sporadic, and they're still there. And they, but they went like half the volume, nowhere near as many. And he hit them again, and all of a sudden, you could just hear hooves. All of them went right up toward that bull when he gave them the roundup to come up there. But this whole time, they were trying to call that bull up there, which they don't know he's dead. They don't know how that works, but they knew we were there. And That was so good to see how that planted that in my head. For just the reassurance of hearing those cow sounds and that cow giving that contact, as some know the estrus, but she just hammered it. She did it about three or four times, about 1 to 1.5 minutes apart. And she didn't do it all the time like they were cow calling. But this is a very sound that I use. I have so many stories where I've used that sound to cement trying to call the bull the last few yards. And when he sounded off, I would cut him off with the bugle. And in so many instances, that's just all it took for him to come flying in. But that is the representation of how that contact sound was used in a perfect instance right there as she urgently or demandingly was telling that bull to get up there to them. Come on now! Whereas the other cows just piped in with their normal, you know, yeah, yeah. That's what they were doing, trying to get him to come up. But it was really a good story how that worked out. Then that bull came up and called those. I wish we'd have had another tag, but I had already killed the bull because I know I could have called that bull right down. But that's neither here nor there. But it was a great learning thing, you know, or a refresher course just to hear it all work out exactly as we've been, you know, teaching and been taught ourselves.
That's awesome. I mean, those encounters are, you know,
they're priceless.
Yeah.
Those are crazy good.
Yeah. Those are the best. I was calling a bull and he was quite a ways away, but I was between him and the cows. Mm. And I got video this. So I started cow calling. I started cow calling originally. I was not bugling originally when I got him to fire off. I was cow calling, but I was between the cows that we had heard these cows, and I started calling, and I can hear him calling and calling. Anyway, so this is a while back. This is before I had even looked into any of this, any of your stuff, or really learned what the hell I was doing. But I stood, I started calling, cow calling, and these two calves came up, and they were just running around in circles. They're like, "Where's mom? I know she's right here," and I mean, like 5 yards away at some point. And I was like videoing them, and it was crazy. I ended up killing that bull. But we end up going to him, like I, you know, we basically ran right at him, and we called him down to us. A buddy of mine got behind me and was raking a tree, and I had two guys with me. The other one was cow calling while he was raking and bugling, and that bull came down and I shot him at 20 yards.
Awesome.
But yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool setup. But I always remember those calves coming in, and then the other cows came up to see, okay, what's going on? I hear this cow, and like we had really good cover. We were like tucked in a bush, mm-hmm. and they didn't know, you know, they didn't know what was going on, but it was a cool encounter.
Yeah, I've had those calves come in like that, and they are so hilarious to watch. I mean, they will come in so nonchalant, and they're the noisiest things in the world. There ain't a sneak mode in them. I mean, they are just bouncing everywhere, and they're hilarious. But yeah, I've seen that happen quite a few times. But and it is, it's it, it doesn't get old. I could watch it every year like that.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Well, I'm going to bring this one to a close, but I definitely want to have you back on.
You bet.
I'm going to give you some specific questions.
Make it soon, though, because I have a lot of stuff, irons in the fire, man, well, really, between now and September.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. All right, well, Paul, thanks for coming on and once again sharing some knowledge with us, and I appreciate you and your time.
Hey, no problem at all. It's my pleasure. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Have a good one.
All right, thanks.